From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we have our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly about her latest Freedom Rider column at BlackAgendaReport.com. I'm laughing. It reminds me of some MTV claymation thing from the 90s or whatever. Okay, this is a good one. I like this. Democratic Party death spiral.
I wrote this last week after the vote in the House of Representatives about health care. I believe they're calling it the American Health Care Act or Trump Care, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah.
And the Democrats, after the vote, began singing this old song, "Hey, Hey, Hey, Goodbye," in the House chambers. Aside from looking ridiculous and being juvenile, I said to myself, so this is what passes for a strategy for the Democrats. They're up to their old tricks of not wanting, of refusing to do the things that their people want them to do. Instead, they depend on Republican unpopularity in order to win.
Yeah, you open the article saying the Democrats are locked in a fatal contradiction. They cannot serve the people and their rich paymasters at the same time.
No, they can't. So, and this is why they've been wiped out, why they don't run anything anymore. They're not in control of state houses, either house of Congress, the presidency. They hope to just thread this needle and do just enough to get their people out, hope that the Republicans do something that they can use to run against them and they can get back in and cut deals with the for corporations, sometimes cut deals with the Republicans. And that's how they that is what passes for a plan with them. And so now they're all they were so happy. They, you know, they seem to think that if this health care plan goes through, that they can run against it in 2018. Now, of course, since then, there is talk of the Senate not acting at all until after 2018, because they're not stupid either, because it possibly could hurt Republicans in congressional races. But so that may not happen at all. But the bigger issue is what's wrong with the Democratic Party and why I believe I've said before its members need to just abandon it. And because we have this party that could easily have won. There's no reason why Trump should be president. Hillary Clinton lost. There are three key states that flipped: Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. All she needed was, I think, it was 75,000 or 80,000 votes in those three states, and she would have been the president. They did not get their people out. And every 2 years, there's this phenomenon, and off-year elections, they do nothing to get their people out. And that's because they don't want to. They cannot do what people want. What do their voters want? People want the minimum wage to go up. Democrats don't care about that. They had a chance to do it. 2009, 2010, they could have raised the minimum wage substantially. They could have passed a card check, the legislation that would have made it much easier for workers to unionize. And they always had an excuse. Well, you know, the Senate's not, we don't have a veto-proof majority. It was always something. And they did nothing with it. Bernie Sanders raised the issue of free college education or debt relief from college loans. Nothing. They didn't act on any of it. So even after she sewed up the nomination, they weren't smart enough to say, let's co-opt, even to be politically cynical and say, well, let's just co-opt Bernie's people and give them something. Nope. It was the same warmed over BS. And they're just a hope that people, if they like Obama, they'll vote for Hillary Clinton. It's Obama's third term and Neil campaigned for her and that, you know, that's it. That's all we have to do. So Hillary Clinton raises $1 billion which is proof of their allegiance to corporate interests. You don't raise that much money any other kind of way. And but still a refusal to do anything that would have kept Democrats in her corner and energized enough people for her to win. Meanwhile, Trump is the one who is the outsider, who talked about being the he wanted it to be the workers' party and things like that. But he's the one who got new votes, got new voters out. So so this is where we are with the Democrats. And they just refuse to do what they know what to do. They know how to get people out, but they don't want to, because this contradiction keeps them from doing it. As long as they're a corporatist party, they will not, they cannot represent the interests of most Americans.
You know, Pelosi now, suddenly, as the Democrats are in the deepest minority that they've been in since 2009, if I'm not mistaken, in both houses, and without the White House, suddenly she finds a device to try to force the creation of an independent panel, quote unquote, to investigate Trump, you know, with the Russiagate stuff.
Right.
You know, with a majority in both houses before, they couldn't push through anything. The things you know, enumerated, raising the minimum wage. By the way, Medicare for All, which has, you know, huge popular support. All of that. Now, from a weak minority position on this Russiagate stuff, oh, wow, there are all these exotic devices that don't require, not only don't they require a supermajority, we can be in the deep minority and still use it to tie up the business of Congress until this is acted on. Never acted like that when, you know, oh, gee, we don't have 60 senators, let's not even propose legislation to raise the minimum wage or for Medicare for All or to defund the wars or to cut back on the none of that stuff. It's amazing, and it's so obvious in front of people, and nobody's talking about it.
No, because they don't want to – Nancy Pelosi, about a week after Election Day, was asked about the changes the Democrats need to make, and she said, we don't need to change anything, and she meant it.
I got a job. So, what's the problem?
Right. She's, and the only reason she's House Speaker is because she's rich and she can pick up the phone and get her friends to write checks. You know, that I'm sure is the long and the short of Nancy Pelosi. But there, you know, the whole Russia thing, if Vladimir Putin didn't exist, Democrats would have to invent him. They are running this Russia gate into the ground because they have to distract people. They have to keep people from having the conversation that we're having right now, and they have to blame someone for their failures. So, and they also get to push the interventionist and imperialist war party agenda that the Democrats love as much as many Republicans do. So they get to kill two birds with one stone by talking about Putin all the time and about accusing Trump of being a Russian agent. And it is working, unfortunately. It is something that people, that many rank and file Democrats are very foolishly, I believe, fixated on instead of asking what's wrong with their party and how it can change. Yeah. So they go on and on and on about Russia. Barack Obama is you know, instead of disappearing like a good former president ought to, he's really still in the mix, telling people not to pay attention to fake news, which means believe what he's saying and, right. And the other people are saying on behalf of the 1%.
And we're back to the methane cloud again, by the way. Yeah.
But yeah. Ahead. Yeah. So he's back. One of the things they did that I touched on in my piece was when they sabotaged Keith Ellison's candidacy for DNC chairmanship. Ellison's he's not that progressive, but they can't take even a little tiny bit of reform. So they recruit Tom Perez to be the DNC chair instead of Ellison. And so this is the kind of thing, instead of getting someone who's even thought of as being a progressive who could re-energize the Democrat Party and start these conversations, they go for the same old, even though voters are rejecting that. You know, the Democrats depend on Republican unpopularity and good marketing, and that's what got Obama in. Hope and change. First black president. I could go on and on and on. So it was a tailor-made for a fairy tale almost. And so he gets in, and we're told Obamacare is this signature achievement, which if it had been Medicare for all, if there had been a public option, Republicans couldn't touch it. Instead, you have this, it's essentially a bailout of the pharmaceutical industry and the healthcare industry. Who are causing, by the way, all of our healthcare problems. The problem is the profit motive.
Right.
But they went on and on and on. And if you ever criticized Obama, the first, what were the first words out of anybody's mouth? Obamacare. But Obamacare. But, you know, so that way you're supposed to just shut up. But it's not a sustainable system for many people. It's not affordable. Some people, some states took the Medicaid provision. Some people, Medicaid expansion, some did not. So it's a mixed bag across the country, and it's not sustainable because it maintains the system that we have. And yes, there are people, I have to say, who have health care now who didn't have it before. But this is why it's difficult for the Republicans to change it too much. The provisions about pre-existing conditions not being used against anyone to deny them coverage, things like that. But it's essentially maintains the system in place, the system that's so problematic. And the Republicans do have a problem because they ran against Obamacare just to be obstructionist. But really, it's a Republican plan.
Yeah,
and that's why they're trying to put it off now.
Yeah.
But for the Democrats, for this to be the only thing that they hang on to in an effort to regain the majority in 2018, which will be hard for them anyway, because Republicans redrew district lines in so many states and created these safe seats. And nobody wants to talk about that and how they were asleep at the wheel while Republicans,
right.
You know, you have to give the devil his due. Republicans think long term, and they may lose a presidential election, but they'll just plan to take over the state legislatures.
Right.
And with the Democrats, you know, content to do nothing, they can get away with it.
And when you take over the state legislatures, you take over the Congress at the next turn of the decade.
Exactly. And do the Democrats have a plan? The next census is only 3 years away. So this would be a time for them to tell us what they're going to do to fight against this. But that's not what they do. And that was my whole point. So here we are once again with people who are progressive, depending on the Democratic Party, who want to be in power without having to represent the people whose votes they want.
Yeah, just for our listeners who, you know, I don't want to talk inside baseball like to them that just don't understand or haven't been, shown the procedures that are followed for electing members of Congress. You have districts that are drawn by the state governments that are the congressional districts for the House of Representatives. And so, you know, if you're going to have whatever the number is, 300,000, 400,000, whatever, in a district, the question is which 300 or 400? How do you draw the boundaries in a way that's going to put your guy in? So, you know, you have all these weird shaped districts that, you know, were like 2 inches wide and 130 miles long, but it's where a bunch of Republicans are standing online at the DMV or something. And so that's now a Republican district. There's going to be another Republican member of the House of Representatives. And what
Correct.
They do every 10 years is adjust these boundaries. And if you have control of the state legislature, you are the one that's drawing the maps. And so there are, a good swing number of seats in the House of Representatives that are strictly creatures of this, of this device. And that's what we're talking about, that the Republicans have been playing this game, you know, as a long-term game very well. As we have the next census, which is at, you know, every decade, they then do the readjustment of these lines. We're talking about what's called gerrymandering. And
right.
And so you know, for the next 10 years, Congress is going to reflect again the status quo at the state legislature level. And that's what we're talking about. Let me flip to something that you wrote here. This is interesting to me, and it's also something that goes over my head from time to time or just gets past me. You wrote, the Democrats are engaging in finger-pointing at the expense of the left, the Russian government, even celebrities. Jill Stein is to blame. Putin's to blame, everybody, et cetera. You mentioned Jill Stein there and the left, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's not what they're saying on TV, but if you look at the traffic on Facebook, there are so many Democratic voters that are, you know, criticizing people on the left who might have voted for Stein or even, you know, for Gloria LaRiva or Monica Moore, you know, whatever, because those, you know, 1,800 people nationally, you know, spoke against Clinton, and that's why she lost. And Jill Stein is to blame for her, you know, whatever small vote she got. Well, if you look at the numbers, of course, it has nothing to do with it. But no, everybody else.
Yeah, you can, people try to, you know, count votes and say that, you know, the difference between the vote Jill Stein got in Wisconsin, for example, and if all those people, all those people voted and voted for Hillary Clinton, she would have won the state instead of Trump. Well, if you're going to engage in conjecture like that, let's engage in the conjecture of Hillary Clinton not bothering to campaign in those states at all.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if the Dem, how do you raise $1 billion and there is no one? And this is what happens when the Democrats depend on less and less and less to try to win. They don't even do basic stuff. How did you not have volunteers going door to door? That's why do you think people do it? Why do you think that's a staple of campaigning? Right. That can get some a fence sitter or an apathetic person. It can remind them and get them out to vote on election day. But they did not do that. They didn't know they were in trouble. And this is what Democrats ought to be talking about. How did we not know that Hillary Clinton was in trouble in these places? And they didn't even do the basics. They didn't even do the bare minimum. So if you're going to engage in conjecture about what ifs, what if Hillary Clinton, she did not set foot in Wisconsin or Michigan for 7 or 8 months?
I know.
And that's where she needed to have gone.
That's where she lost.
Exactly. So instead of saying that, you know, if so-and-so hadn't been on the ballot, she would have won, you could also say, suppose she'd actually campaigned. And what does that tell you about the apparatus of the Democratic Party, that they are so divorced, they are so alienated from what is going on the ground that they had no clue that she was in danger? None.
Well,
so they this blaming the left, actually, it's just the opposite. If the left hadn't been so marginalized by the Democrats, she would have won. They don't even know how to co-opt people. They don't even feel the need to do that.
That's right. You know, I'm going to go back to Pelosi right now and the whole healthcare thing. Even now, instead of, you know, pulling these exotic devices out to, you know, make a fool out of herself again on the floor, attempting to force some kind of Russiagate probe outside of what Congress can already conduct on its own, if she were to propose Medicare for all or even a drop in the age to 55 or 45 or 50 or something, it would have to pass. You have the entire House of Representatives up for re-election next year, which has a Republican majority. Each one of those people would have to go back to explain to every person over the age of 55 or whatever, you don't have this Medicare for all because of me. Vote for me? I mean, all she has to do is propose it. And it has its own life.
Sure, you could propose it, dare the Republicans to vote it down.
Right.
And then you could run against that. If Democrats want Medicare, but they don't want Medicare for all.
That's right. That's
so
the point.
These very simple things they could do to even while they're in the minority and don't have the power to carry them out, they are things that they can use instead of trying to drag out Russiagate to run against Trump that way. Run against Trump and the Republicans and say, we wanted Medicare for all, but they're the ones who kept you from having it. We wanted to lower the age for Medicare, but they're the ones who kept you from having it. But they don't want to do that. They're afraid it might actually happen. And then, oh my God, what would they do? They'd have to actually produce something that their people wanted and that their wealthy people and corporate interests don't want them to do. So it is the worst strategy ever. But they're caught in the contradiction. And I guess this is the age of contradictions, and they're becoming more and more acute, that you have this party that has outlived its usefulness. But unfortunately, it's not going to just disappear like it ought to, because they have this, they still have this power to command the media. People have been, as we were just saying, we're always told that you don't have an option. You have to be a Democrat or Republican. You're just a spoiler if you're not a Democrat. And every time a Democrat loses, it's like when Gore lost in 2000. Right. It's a blow to the left, because it intimidates people and they're afraid right. to think outside of that box.
Nader did it.
Yes. So it's Nader. It's Jill Stein. It's, yeah, right. you know, they are all to blame. So, so yes, so they, I understand, I don't watch him at all, that Bill Maher went on this rant against people who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, and it's their fault that that Trump is president. It's not the Democratic Party's fault, but it's the fault of people who would not vote for the corporatist warmonger who, you know, was either right. going to get us into World War III,
yeah.
or get rid of so do some deal with the Republicans and get rid of entitlements.
You know, let me just say, you know, personally, looking at Bill Maher, I think he's more responsible for sticking me with the choice between Clinton and Trump than I'm responsible for President Trump. He's on
oh,
in
absolutely.
Front of millions of people every week supporting the system. Then affirmatively arguing for Hillary Clinton, who, as you mentioned, by the way, probably would have started World War III. And,
yes.
and so that's the choice we're presented with. And the fact that we get one or the other of those is somehow the fault of the left. Jill Stein, Ralph Nader, you, me. I think my cousin Susan had something to do with it, too. And we end up in a place where no one asks, for example, well, you had $1 billion.
Yes.
With $1 billion, I could levitate the planet Neptune from my bedroom, you know, with a magic decoder ring. And yet, with the entire media supporting you, with
yes.
more name recognition than, say, Jesus Christ, and with a whole legion of people willing to go out and knock on doors and everything else, for some reason, none of that happened. Somebody got paid $1 billion, by the way. And
yes.
And we still have President Trump, who spent, I think, $150 and sold a couple of box tops of Trump cereal or something.
Well, he got bailed out by a rich person.
At the end,
way the
yeah,
system
yeah, yeah.
worked. This guy Mercer,
right?
Billionaire hedge fund guy. But yeah, absolutely. And everybody, unfortunately, too many Democrats have refused. I remember on election night, I wrote a piece. I think it was called "Dump the Democrats for Good."
Yeah.
And I was saying that Hillary Clinton's loss was proof that the Democratic Party is spent and needs to just disappear. But people can't think that way. And, you know, and Trump is such an easy, it's such an easy target. It's
for
easy
sure.
for them to just point at him. That's why they want to keep him around. That's why they don't really want him. They don't want him to be impeached. They
yeah,
want
right.
to run against him. But that's, again, that's the easy way out for them. And I find it really, I shouldn't be shocked, but sometimes I am, that the Democrats' lack of a strategy, their belief that they could, that Hillary Clinton could just coast into office, that nobody is, there is a book out now, I think it's called Shattered, and I have not read it yet, but apparently it does dissect this debacle and how it came about. But people are not talking about it the way they should. And of course, the Democrats aren't going to encourage it. Why do that when you can go on and on about Russia? So here we are, stuck between a rock and a hard place, a far-right party and a center-right party, and both of them loving war, and no one powerful to speak for us. But I don't think that's a reason to back down. I don't care what Bill Maher or anybody else says, I'm still going to be a member of the Green Party and not the Democrats. We must send them out the door. Yeah. It's very important.
And we hold it for them and then lock it, like throw the deadbolt in the police lock after they're outside.
Yes.
So, all right. So we get rid of the Democratic Party. Something has to, I don't know, germinate. Spring into existence. Something has to replace it, and not replace it. Something has to come into existence that's a useful tool for the finding democratic expression of the sentiments and needs and wants of working class people and the majority of the population, however you want to characterize it. What do we do? I mean, what is that instrument going to be, and how do we help create it or help it spring into life?
Well, I have argued for, nature abhors a vacuum. And I have my argument for, and it's true, our system is hostile to third parties. And I've always said, well, we need to replace the Democrats. They're the ones who need to disappear.
Right.
So I'm going to keep saying that. But we have to have a conversation on the left about how advancing our movement. And I think we have to start with the masses of people. The leadership is pretty worthless, especially for Black people. We are tied to the Democratic Party. We are the most risk-averse group of all, because the Republicans play the role of being the white people's party, and that creates so many other problems for us. But we have to fight against this Black misleadership class, which they are the Democratic Party in essence. But I think we have to act first. And I think the fact that they have lost is something that we can use, instead of being afraid and pointing fingers and saying, see, this is why you have to stick with the Democrats no matter what. I think we can make the counter argument of, we stuck with the Democrats and look where we are.
Right.
And that we making the case that we must do something differently.
Yeah, I'm looking at, you mentioned the Black misleadership class. We have the labor misleadership class, and then in general, and then we have the Democratic Party, which is sort of like the people's misleadership political class or whatever. And so the phenomenon that we see, including the creation of that vacuum, that's the subject matter of your article about the Democratic Party, plays out among the constituent parts of it, Black community, labor generally, et cetera. And I'm wondering, we have the same opportunities presenting themselves and the same challenges. Labor, for example, the organized labor has shrunk into a fraction of what it was. Its political power has almost evaporated, except for the money that the unions raise to support inside candidates whose support is negotiated by this misleadership class, not by labor. It has nothing to do with labor's interests. Same with the Black misleadership class. Generally, as you have like these constituent parts, I wouldn't say reproducing, they're producing what's happening at the national level, which is reproducing it. Is there room to start building alternative structures, say, to, in labor, in the Black community, in other places where the Democratic Party stands on or stands upon?
Oh, sure, there is. You mentioned labor. The past few years, the tactic of the Republicans has been to end collective bargaining rights for public sector employees. And they started this in Wisconsin. And Barack Obama never said anything about it. So I think these attacks are opportunities for us to make the case for doing something new and doing something different. I think we can point to their failure. It's going to be very, very difficult, though. I don't think we can soft pedal what we're up against. You have the corporate media is still powerful. Instead of fighting against the Democratic Party, Democrats will just, sit and watch Rachel Maddow or something and act as though that's taking some action. So we have a lot up against us. But I do believe there are a lot of misleadership classes. There's a media misleadership class,
yeah,
and a labor
sure.
misleadership class, and I could go on.
Yep.
But I think it's important for us not to back down and not to let these people intimidate us and tell us that we are responsible for their many failures.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at BlackAgendaReport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. We've been discussing this week's column, Democratic Party Death Spiral. Margaret, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.